This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm now really pleased to introduce Fiona Gregory. Welcome to the show, Fiona.
Thank you.
Really good to have you on. I was going to ask you, I know that you worked in HR for over 10 years, I think in executive services.
In professional services, yeah, that's right.
So what sort of prompted the move to executive coaching? Was that sort of a natural progression or...?
Yeah, so I'd worked in professional services for a long time and my HR career had developed over those years, originally helping senior people in the business build teams, so helping with search and selection and recruitment and helping organisations grow teams quite rapidly. But then my role started to move more into people development and talent management and more generalist HR responsibilities. And part of that involved training and development, succession planning, some coaching as well. And I think I just realized over a period of time that coaching was something I really enjoyed and was good at. And in my role also as a volunteer at Childline, I am at times coaching people. Yeah. And so I just began to learn that it was a strength that I had, and that then evolved into something that I wanted to do more full time.
And did you have to sort of take on any supplementary training to, you know, perform the role as a coach, or was it something that you already kind of knew and had evolved over time from sort of previous training that, you know, you were able to build on that? Or
yeah, so I think there are a number of bits of training that have developed me as a coach. Some of it's still ongoing. So initially, for the employers that I worked for, there was training in coaching, how to be a coach as part of an HR function or as somebody responsible for other people's career development. And certainly also the training at Childline's very comprehensive. And my role there is as a counsellor, but you're also in a position to coach young people. And so you learn there also coaching skills. So initially training, obviously highly experiential. So my various HR roles, being able to coach people day to day. And then I'm now building on that and consolidating that experience with an internationally recognized diploma in executive coaching.
Right. Okay.
So you don't need a qualification to be a coach. You can learn the skill. You can take training in the skill, and it is a very experiential thing that you get better at with time. But for me, the diploma allowed me to understand a wider range of coaching models, to understand more about executive coaching, which is different to other types of coaching, and to get an internationally recognised qualification and accreditation, which might enable me to work with a broader range of organisations across different industries and across different countries as well.
Right.
Something that I've always wondered about, with just going back to Childline very briefly, is do you get, once you've spoken to a child that evening or that day, do you get to find out what's happened subsequently to that?
Not usually. So children call Childline or contact us online anonymously. Sometimes young people want to share their personal details. More often than not, they don't. Sometimes contacts are very high risk, and that means you might need to breach confidentiality. For instance, you might need to involve emergency services in a young person's situation, and that can sometimes involve taking personal details and making a referral to another agency in a situation of crisis. And then sometimes you'll get a call back from paramedics or from the police and you'll hear what happened. Sometimes a young person comes back and says, I want to say thank you to the person I spoke to last night, and that, you know, the counsellor might have exchanged their name with the young person. But those situations actually are quite rare, so normally it's completely anonymous.
And typically people phoning Childline, what sort of typical age, average age? Teenagers, presumably?
Yeah, mostly teenagers. We do have children probably as young as 5 and 6 calling in sometimes. And it's a really wide range of problems, actually. So young people today are faced with not only you know, very serious instances of abuse and neglect, but also if you think about your average young person, cyberbullying.
Yeah,
I was going to say about that, yeah. Actually. Facebook,
really big issue. Social media, family relationships and friendships, bullying at school, exam stress and worries, not knowing what to do when they finish school, learning difficulties, problems maybe in a care placement, health problems. So really, really broad range of issues, actually, that children and young people bring.
Do you think the mental health issue side has escalated over the last few years?
It absolutely has. Right. I mean, I've been at Childline for about 9 years now, and I've seen a dramatic increase in the number of young people that contact us to talk about what they themselves call anxiety and depression. And I think there are a number of factors to consider. So firstly, young people are more aware of the terminology, and it is to an extent overused. There's a lot of self-diagnosis, particularly online. But also I think there's much more awareness about mental health illnesses and conditions these days, and more help is available. I think it's talked about more freely in society, at schools, in clubs. And so I think there's just much more opportunity for young people to reach out for help. Mm. I think what's really interesting is the mental health issues related to social media.
Yeah.
And I've heard some really scary statistics about the fact that when the population using social media daily tipped 50% through smartphones, that meant that mental health issues rose. And I can't remember where I heard that statistic, but we definitely see that, that actually the overuse of social media and the addictive nature of social media causes a lot of anxiety for young people.
And what sort of age is the tipping point? Is it early teens? You know, when people are really sort of being influenced by that? I mean, you know, I would have thought later in teenage years they kind of almost get over it, or is that not the case? I mean, what sort of age are you sort of really feeling, you know,
I mean, I would say at the age of around 10 or 11,
as young
people are heavily involved with smartphones.
Wow.
So I don't really understand why a 10 or 11-year-old needs a smartphone. I'm being old-fashioned, I mean, for an emergency, a phone, yes, I get that, but a smartphone?
Yeah. And I think that part of the problem is peer pressure, and part of the problem is also school policy for me. So I think what's happened is a telephone or a mobile phone has become a mobile computer.
Yeah.
So technology has advanced at a huge rate, more than it ever has done in any other period of history. Mm. And so we've given young people this technology, but we haven't really taught them how to use it, how to stay safe. But also, most of these apps are built to be addictive, because that's what the businesses promoting them want. And we haven't really equipped young people really to deal with the addictive nature of these technologies. And so what you see, for instance, is a young person who's sitting on Instagram, and Instagram has obviously millions of followers. I think it's something like 800 million users across the globe. Most of those are female. So there's the selfie culture.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is people are sitting in front of this technology and finding it very hard to self-regulate. And there's no, you know, there's no consistent policy set by schools, for instance, about the use of social media or the use of smartphones in class. So in some schools, it's a real problem that there's peer pressure to have the latest technology. Teachers are allowing smartphones in class. There can be bullying during class time online. There can also be really inappropriate images being taken. I don't know if you saw a recent Panorama program that was focused on child-to-child abuse happening in the classroom with smartphones. So there's a whole load of new issues now for young people to have to deal with.
I think it's incredibly hard for teachers. I mean, you know, I've heard of situations where teachers have said, hand your phones in, and they just hand in an old phone that that's been in the house that they don't even use anymore, and the real phone that they're using is in their pocket.
Yeah.
You know, it's how difficult is it to police it these days?
It's so difficult. I think parents are really finding it difficult to manage this, because they might themselves feel as though it's too early for their child to have a smartphone, But the peer pressure at school is so intense, especially around Christmas time, that it gets really difficult to stand your ground with young people.
Parents almost need to come together and say, look, if all of us do this, then it's... But obviously, if only one parent's standing alone doing that, that child's going to feel left out, aren't they, isolated?
Yes, absolutely. The and they need the backing of schools, I feel, personally. And I think the government are now looking at this. They're looking at the use of smartphones in schools. But also, I think a lot of parents find that schools now expect homework to be done via smartphones and emailed in or laptops and emailed in.
That's true.
That kind of, especially private schools. So there's that to contend with as well.
Sure.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. You say to the child, we need the computer. Well, I need it to do my homework.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, how do you stop it?
Yeah.
So moving on to some of the other work you do, obviously you're an executive coach. So what are some of the services that you provide businesses?
So I work with either individuals on a private one-to-one basis, or I'll be engaged by an organisation to work with executives in their team. And I'm trained and experienced in working with them to solve issues. So coaching is different to mentoring and training and consulting, in that a coach doesn't bring answers to an individual. So a coach will help somebody work through their own problems. And instead of answers, a coach brings questions, hopefully quite insightful questions that help somebody work through their own particular issue in a way that will work for them, depending on the environment that they work in, the culture, the resources they have available, the support. So if I think about the kind of people I'm coaching at the moment, it's quite a wide range. They're mostly directors or partners within professional services. Some people, I'm helping them manage and negotiate an exit strategy from their firm. I'm helping some people who are new in role, establish themselves within the first 12 months and really focus themselves on high performance in that time. Some people are on leadership development programs, and they're really focused on what kind of leader do I want to be? Who am I? And how do I establish myself as a future leader for this organization? What's important for me? What's expected? For other people, it's really about managing conflict or stakeholder relationships within an organisation. So it really is driven by the person and whatever's going on for them at the time.
I always think it must be a huge problem for someone that's got reached a really senior level in terms of their identity, that their identity is a VP or their identity is the CEO, then suddenly they're made redundant or they lose their job and they lose their identity.
Yeah.
How do you find they cope with something like that? How do you help them through that kind of...
Yeah, that's an interesting one, actually. And I think it's similar, actually, to what you often see in retirement, that people lose the sense of social interaction, their sense of identity. And so the reason that coaching is really good in those scenarios is that it's very forward looking. And so it helps somebody explore what's important to them, what their priorities are, what they will find fulfilling, what's going to be the right balance for them in their life. And then think very pragmatically about action. So how will you explore this and how will you take it forward?
Because it's a chance also to reinvent themselves, isn't it? It's a great opportunity. Yeah. They can see that in a positive light rather than the negative from it.
Do you remember a few months ago we had a coach, I think that's how she described herself, and she focused very much on mind shift and mindset. So people had gone through their lives, maybe, you know, got to a very senior level, and then they had a complete change, but they were still in thinking a certain way. And I think she was talking about shift your mentality, shift the way you think. I mean, do you get involved in that as well? I suppose it's part of it.
Yeah, I think anybody going through any kind of change will experience quite a wide range of emotions, and they'll often oscillate between those emotions. And what's difficult for some people, or actually most people, is that before you experience a new beginning, you're often in a limbo state. So you might leave an organisation, for instance, and have a whole range of emotions attached to that, some of them very joyous, some of them very difficult and negative, and you'll take those with you. And then you might start planning for the future. And although that's quite an exciting thing to do, there's lots of fear attached to that. And often it's not until you actually start your new beginning, whatever it is, whatever you've chosen, that you start to experience the really positive feelings, because before that point, most people go through quite a lot of self-doubt. Mm. and negative feeling and anger often towards what might have come before, and fear about what might be in the future.
So you've almost got to close that before you open that next door. Is that sort of...
Yeah. And I what I experience actually with people is that they may start something new and then there'll be a period where they're quite confused because they expect to be feeling elated, happy, fulfilled, and they may regress and actually have some quite difficult feelings where they're doubting the choice that they made, wondering whether they're capable, have they made the right decision, and it can take a little while to settle into something new. So there's definitely a lot of different emotions to consider in all of that.
Interesting, yeah.
Well, sadly, we've reached the end of the interview again, I'm afraid, Fiona, but if there's anyone out there that's thinking of coaching but a bit fearful about what to expect, what would you say to them?
I would say that coaching can seem to most people like a bit of a luxury in terms of the money they might spend on self-development or professional development. I think what I've seen is that everybody I've ever worked with has really benefited from coaching.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say so as well. And if a guest wants to get in contact with you, what's your email address?
My email address is fegregory@sky.com.
Thank you, Fiona. So that was Fiona Gregory, an independent executive coach.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.